Okay. So, hello everybody and welcome back to Brunch Brothers Podcast. It has been a very long time. It's been many, many months since I've done an episode. Life has been very, very interesting. Been very busy doing all sorts of really cool stuff. And now we have decided to sort of, resurrect. That's the one. Today I'm joined by not one but two guests, which I'm particularly very, very happy about. Everything today has just kind of happened as a matter of figuring it out as we go along, which is kind of like how my whole life is, and to be honest, it's all winging it. So yeah, we're gonna wing this, which is great, except the only thing that we're not gonna wing is the topic that we're gonna be discussing today. However, before I get into it, I want to introduce you to these two gentlemen who are sat with me today. So we have, just here we have Robert Chigozie, who is a serial entrepreneur. He's a fashion designer, film producer, my very, very good friend and my business partner. So yes, please do welcome him. So, so good to have him here today. Absolutely.
Pleasure to be here, bro.
Yep. Now people get to hear the kind of stuff we actually talk about
on a regular basis.
Which is, yeah, exactly.
Dope.
Yep. And then we also have a delightful gentleman who goes by the name Charles Banigo, who is also a designer. He has created this incredible bag.
Really cool.
Right. This his brand is called 2-1, I believe. Yes, 2-1. Yes. That's right. And Charles is not only a designer, he is also a court clerk. So, you know, good to see some melanin in the courtroom on the other side of justice.
For real? Listen.
On the other side of justice.
Other side.
So that's great. And
changes.
That's yes. Right. Yes, yeah. And this was not planned to happen this way, but the three of us are all members of the 56 Black Men campaign.
Well done, boys. Wow. I guess.
Come on,
come on.
I'm number 26. Rob, you are 24. You are number two. Right. So good to have you guys here today. Currently, for the listeners at home and wherever you're listening, I currently have some chicken cooking in the oven.
It's gonna be glorious. I'm not gonna lie.
Listen, so when this episode is over, please understand that it is because Rob has said the alarm's going off and the chicken is ready.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So the plan is today to get into some really good, wholesome, perhaps some challenging and perhaps even difficult discussion. Thought provoking. Yep. And then after we're exhausted by delving into our emotions, because it's a secondary thing for us as men, we can go and replenish ourselves and go and
talk about nutritional needs.
That's right, go and have some chicken. So welcome. Cool, so let's get straight into it. Gentlemen, today I want to talk about triggers.
Triggers!
I want to talk about triggers. Not the triggers from the end, guys.
Triggers.
I want to talk about triggers that are formed as a result of various traumas in life. Why do I want to talk about triggers today? Well, first of all, I think we should talk about triggers on a regular basis. It's necessary. It's important. We are naturally programmed to ignore triggers. And when you find people suddenly losing their mind or just not being themselves, having a particularly difficult time in terms of existential crisis, identity crisis, it's a lot to do with not being able to identify triggers. That is what I have found. Guys, I'm not a psychologist, but I'm speaking
pretty
from...
accurate.
Yeah.
Summary of kind of that, yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
So, on Friday, I had a... This is a couple of days ago, by the way. Friday, I had a fairly good day, you know. Feeling some type of way. I was in my feelings a little bit. I didn't know why. And I saw an image of somebody that I've known, someone I've known for a very long time, someone who is a friend, someone who has not done me wrong. Okay? I need this to be clear. This man has not done me any wrong, but I saw his face on Instagram and Facebook and was triggered. Right. I'll tell you another one. Then I bumped into somebody later on that day. I went to the cinema. Shout out to Marisai Martin, The youngest executive producer in Hollywood. I went to go and see your movie the other day. I think you're a star. I think you're amazing. Shout out to Regina Hall and to Issa Rae. Love you, queens. Issa Rae, you inspire me. You're the reason why I network sideways and not upwards. So thanks for the shout. I went to go and see Little the other day. And straight after, I bumped into an old schoolmate of mine. I'm talking 20 years back, okay? So I went to a school called Archbishop Michael Ramsey. Anybody who from Southeast London who knows what Archbishop Michael Ramsey is will understand that that place was indeed the devil's pit. It was one of the ugliest places to go to school, not just visually, but it was soul destroying. Mm. You know,
you have to be a strong person to deal with that. Yeah,
so. Right. Right, you're local, so you know about it, Charles. And listen, yeah, I mean, we're talking about, you know, students being airlifted by a helicopter because someone's, you know, back got broke so badly in a fight. We're talking about someone who was hospitalized after being hit in the head with a crowbar. We're talking about Friday afternoon fights between Michael Ramsey and Sacred Heart. It was tradition, it was culture. And for those of us who didn't participate, we had to walk down to Kennington to get the bus, because bus drivers were not stopping for two or three bus stops near the schools because they were not trying to have the pass out on their buses, right? So it was horrible. It was horrible. I got bullied severely, but not bullied in the traditional sense where you get pushed around and stomped on and whatever. I mean, that was only sometimes, you know? But generally, it was lots of mental and emotional abuse, yeah? So, bumped into this old schoolmate after the cinema. Really happy to see him. Again, have to emphasize, he's never done anything wrong to me. We've never even so much as had an argument, okay? But I was triggered, gentlemen. I was triggered because those two people who I went to school with, one who I saw on socials, one who I saw in person, they reminded me, for some reason that day, of this horrible, dark past that I deliberately suppressed back in 2002. Before I left that school, I was like, I don't want to remember these people. I don't want to remember what happened. It was too painful. It was too much. When I was moving away, I was very keen on a fresh start, not knowing, you know, at the time that this would come back, you know, in many years and bite me. So I called you, Rob, as I do.
I was there.
I called Rob.
I was there.
You know, when I'm in my feelings, I call Rob and I'm like, yo, like, something's happening. And you know, I want to tell myself to shut up because it feels silly, it feels stupid, but I'm like, no, talk, talk, talk. And whenever I try and sort of back away from talking, Rob's like, nah, man, talk.
Get it out.
You
know, you need to address these things, mate.
Yeah. There we were. We had actually gotten on the call to discuss a film that we're co-producing at the moment, and then it turned into all about my emotions. So, I want to tell you what came up, what the trigger. Or what was triggered, okay? Rob, you and I had a discussion in December about something that I call abandonment issues. Abandonment complex issues.
Yeah.
I have what I describe as abandonment complex issues, okay? And what that means is that when I form a close relationship with somebody, subconsciously, I don't want them to leave me, okay? Now, I'm not the clingy type. I'm not gonna call you like 15,000 times a day or whatever. If you tell me you're busy, it's calm, like it's not an issue. But in terms of like friendship, if I start to sense any kind of distancing, anxiety happens. The reason why that even happened is because when I was bullied so much as a kid, I didn't have friends. Do you get what I'm saying? So not having those friends, and then eventually you grow older, you stop finding people who genuinely like you for who you are. When things go pear-shaped, you're devastated.
Yeah, even more so, yeah.
Exactly. You know, I remember when Rob started dating this girl, you know, and I was like, yeah, really happy for you and everything, but I want to come clean about something. I said, I have abandonment complex issues. I said, I know that you're not going to switch out our friendship for this woman. You know, I know you're not going to switch out our business for this woman, but the entry of a new person into your life, it triggers my abandonment complex issues. Do you understand? Right? That was so hard for me to say, but I understood it was very important for me to say it. So,
no, I said it's important for the other person to know as well, especially like in the relationship we have where we're always speaking, we're together closely, we're friends, we're bros, like
all that kind of stuff.
It's
exactly.
Very important.
Yeah.
And I expect that to be, you know, expressed.
So the things that were triggered that day, just by seeing those two people, first it started with the school memories, mm-hmm. and then it went on to the betrayals, and it went on to the actual abandonment. So it reminded me of all the situations or relationships that I had that came to an abrupt end with no explanation. That's the key, no explanation. It's not that these things ended, it's because there was no explanation. So things that happened when I was in year 7, year 8, year 9, things that were unexplained, things that hurt me but remained unexplained. When my father left our family when I was 14 years old, to this day, 16 years later, unexplained, okay? In my adult years, you know, two very dear friendships that one became super skewed and the other one just came to a dead end. To this day, no explanation. So when I see something that reminds me of being left behind or abandoned, I am triggered. Now, have I made it clear? The basis of this discussion?
Yeah.
Right, cool. So I want to start with Charles. Do you know what your triggers are?
That is an interesting question. I think if I am going to be honest with myself, I'm sensitive. There's certain aspects where it's like if someone says something, I could interpret that as an attack on me. And that's because I'm somewhat bullied, that not like in a violent way, people are pushing me against the wall or nothing like that. It was more of a case of just finding the right type of people and stuff. But besides from it, I guess I'm sensitive, that's one. And I guess I could take things, I take things too personally. If I was being honest, I think that's the ones I can think of. Like, and I had time to reflect on it, and it's something I'm addressing and I'm working on to kind of like say, oh, not everyone's an attack on me. And I can just actually just relax and just not let it get to me and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's something that I could seriously work on to this day. So yeah.
So has that sort of drawn from that kind of particular experience, or is that?
It has drawn from a particular experience.
Or experiences. Yeah.
I guess the experience is that, you know, when I was little, I guess people would sometimes like take piss and stuff, and I would react in a defensive way.
Of course, yeah.
So that's kind of had, and plus when I was in secondary school, it's quite. Going to set someone's apostle is quite like a tough school.
Oof.
Feels a
SC15 out here.
SC15.
You're saying about all the things, man. It's like, mate, we had police waiting outside. We had a lot.
That was when the government cared about our safety, and they assigned the police officers to our schools.
To be a very strong person to deal with that sort of thing, but. Aside from it, it's made me who I am as a person, and obviously it's from it that I have all of these small like flaws and trigger points. So I'm trying, like I said, I'm addressing it. And I think it's good to always reflect. It's good to reflect knowing that something may have happened in your past, but then you can then go forward saying, right, this is what happened, this is why I act in a certain way, and then address it forward. And it's just an ongoing thing.
In terms of being defensive, how defensive would you say you are now on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, I'm not. I'm really chilled. I think it just depends on how someone could chat to me in a way, and if they're saying something which, in a way, like someone is, it's kind of hard because it could stem in many different things. It could be if someone, how someone talks to me in a way, if I feel that there's like another layer underneath what they're saying, I would, would lead to suspicion. Now, if that's just one example, another example is someone could generally say that, oh, hey, you've messed up on something, which I sometimes might do, and they just give me something for me to improve on. But then if it's like a constant thing, I would get, I would feel some type of way, be like, well, why you keep talking about this again and again and again? Do you know what I mean? And the person generally could be that they're just helping me out. So I have these tendencies where I suppose it's more, I'm a little bit of like a passive aggressor, but then I would actually would think about it and say like, is it just me that's feeling these things, or is it just someone's doing it, but then they may not realize how it's been put across. And that's why I'm very slow towards jumping into conclusions. I actually want to take time, actually think about this and say, if it's something that I feel, but then the person might feel, I probably would address it. So I wouldn't have like a major thing where I would just explode or something. Like I would actually would just say, hey, you know, this, I feel some type of way when you say this sort of thing, and I like to have that discussion just to let the person know, and it'll just go from there. But that's just a small little thing of it. But I'm really chilled.
Okay.
So you got nothing to fear.
Rob, what are your triggers?
Yeah. So one trigger for me is probably just like being told that I can't do something. Like as simple as that sounds, in the sense that more than like a you won't be able to achieve that or whatever. Basically, there's this one teacher.
Bait her out. Or bait him up.
Secondary school. I'm not even gonna bait names in that. But it's long. You know what I mean? Look at me. We're doing great things. I don't care anymore. So, but it's a trigger in a sense that that's the mess I'll reveal. She was very. I don't know why. She had something, an issue with me, fam. Like
she could smell the greatness.
Yeah, probably. And she would almost just damn me with everything. Like, yeah, you're never gonna be able to do that. Like, you're not gonna do that. Like, even like, I used to come up with like projects and stuff like that. She was a maths teacher. And like, I remember one time, parents evening, fam, she literally just threw me in front of the bus in front of my mum, fam. I was like, wow. Do you know what I mean? And obviously my mum, you know, she wasn't particularly happy about it. But that experience, fam, it got me to this thing of, I can achieve anything, like I can do. So what, like for example, you know, if I sit with someone and tell them about my idea and they start picking holes at me, I'm not gonna lie, I'm just like, I'm gonna do it anyways. Like, do you know what I mean? But yeah, I've started to understand that, you know what, like, it's actually important to have that objective view and not, I guess, get defensive to an extent and actually understand that, you know what, assess the person who's actually saying that and see, you know, actually they do bring some value to what I'm expressing to them. And it's something I've had to really just understand, especially where I'm at in life with all these ideas and businesses and that. Like, sometimes, you know, whoever's giving me that feedback, that critical, constructive criticism, it's actually necessary, do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it's not necessarily them telling me that I won't be able to achieve that thing, I won't be able to, you know, move forward with that, and I shouldn't explore that idea. Like, they're just probably concerned, you know, and I've sort of probably seen the other elements of the idea that I haven't. So that's a massive trigger for me. Just like anyone that, if there's even a hint of, you won't be able to.
A hint of doubt.
It's just like, what? Do you know what I mean? It just triggers my, I'm gonna prove you wrong kind of complex. Do you know what I mean? And I just, sometimes I can just get way too deep into it. And it's just like, no, too much.
I've seen you go there.
Yeah, man, I'm just having
a good. Do you remember a long, long time ago? Or maybe not that long ago, but I said to you one time, you didn't say the words, you know, I'm going to prove so-and-so wrong, whatever.
Yeah.
But it was surrounding the I'm going to prove them wrong. And then I turned around and I think this is a really important thought for the listeners. I then said to you, okay, do you want to prove them wrong or do you want to prove yourself right?
Because
proving people wrong is misplaced energy.
It's misplaced energy completely.
You know,
on the back of that, can actually take you down a road that's actually complete enough to do what you actually want to achieve.
That's it.
Anyways.
That's it. So, because you've tailored your path to try and appease the opinion of the person who actually doesn't care.
That you're all, actually proving them wrong. Then even damn, bruv. Then like, if you're not 10 out of 10, I proved you wrong. Be like,
so what was that again?
What happened? What do you mean? Tears?
Oh my god, I said that. Oh my god, I'm not even that person anymore. I'm
born again and everything, but I'm physical.
That's happened, you know. You know, one time.
You know what I mean? So yeah, bro. Like yeah, that situation. I know what you're referring to as well. Definitely.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Yes. Yes.
That stuff.
Yes.
And I kind of was moving mad.
I've never seen you so angry.
I was moving mad, but yeah. And I reckon to an extent it probably did throw me off track a little bit. And I was looking at opportunities that I didn't really need to be looking at because they had nothing to do with me, because I was in the mindset of proving this person wrong. Yeah, but it's
but it happens though.
It happens though.
And I think it takes a bigger man to admit that you went off track because you were trying 100%. To prove someone else wrong.
Yeah.
I think it takes a bigger man to admit that. Okay, so I wanna touch on because I think it's important that we talk about these things and we talk about how we feel about them and how we are affected and so on and so forth. It's really, really important. Brunch Brothers is all about getting in touch with your emotions and being able to be emotionally aware and emotionally apt, you know. So one of the things that I'd like to share is what I realized after I had my super, super trigger moment. Now, when this trigger happened, I didn't react in like a wild way. I was particularly besides myself, especially because when I realized I was triggered, I wasn't in any kind of pain. I didn't have that usual heart-wrenching, gut-twisting. It was just something that says, you're triggered right now, and you're triggered deeply. And if you say it out loud, it's gonna sound hella stupid. Because you're talking about stuff that happened between 20 years ago and 2.5 years ago. Get over your damn self, you fool. Right? And so, as I'm going through that, Rob is like, okay, cool. Just had this really great meeting. I'm gonna call you so we can catch up. I was like, brilliant. How soon is that gonna be?
Pick it.
Because I was like, we need to talk. I said, I'm triggered. You know.
I was confused. I was like, talk about what?
I know. Because I've been having such a great couple of weeks and whatever. You know, guys, I've taken up yoga, hot yoga. It's amazing. Yeah. I absolutely recommend it.
Loving it, mate.
I'm loving it, and also as well, my stomach is going down. Hallelujah. So anyway, I messaged Rob, like, I'm triggered. So I didn't have that usual kind of like, oh my god, I'm triggered. This is wild. That's because I caught it as it happened. So what happens is, and go with me with this, what happens is sometimes you're out and about and you see somebody that you don't like, but all your attention, when you see them, all your attention goes to making it seem like everything's okay. All your energy goes
to actually overly
do it, you know. And some people do it great, you know, and they see the person and it's all gravy, whatever.
Like, hey, what's up?
Cool. But does that change the fact that you were triggered when you saw this motherfucker? No. No, it does not change that fact. So, I saw this guy that I went to school with years and years ago, and I also saw this dude who I also went to school with on my timeline, and I'm like, I'm triggered. I'm hella triggered. I didn't want to lie. I took the attention away from how do I pretend like this is a blissful moment and, I'm actually okay, to I'm triggered. So, what happened going forward is that I then had to acknowledge, and again, go with me with this, I had to acknowledge that these people who have triggered me have nothing to do with what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah, they absolutely have nothing to do with it, yeah.
I experienced somebody who was triggered, someone in my family 2 weeks ago, last week, whatever, who got triggered by something I said. And if I really said something that was out of order,
I would
fully be like, you know what, I'm really sorry, or whatever. But then I am in a space where I acknowledge that pain you're feeling, what you're going through right now, is actually not my fault. Because I really do care about reconciliation and I really do care about making up. But at the same time, if I can come to you and make up with you and say sorry, but then if you get triggered again, it's not really my fault why you're reacting like that.
Yeah.
So I had to twist it around and be like, damn, you know, these guys are not to blame for this anguish that I'm feeling. They're not to blame for the fact that there are still pockets of trauma from secondary school that have remained undealt with. And to accept that is quite big, because the first thing you do is you blame yourself for not being on the ball of dealing with it. But at the same time, you know, I had to catch myself and be like, yeah, but who taught me how to deal with it?
Deep stuff.
That's very, 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 very key.
Right? No one taught me how to deal with it.
No.
So, bear in mind though, one of the brothers, the guy who I saw on socials, I still muted him on everything, right? I didn't unfollow him or block him. Or, no, because he didn't do anything. I just muted him because I was like, I don't want to see your face, because if I see your face, I'm going to be triggered. Because right now, that person is very heavily associated with people who actually are participants in a more recent trauma, which falls in line with the stuff that I went through when I was a kid, which aroused the whole abandonment complex. It aroused the whole pain from dad leaving. It aroused the pain from my best friends abandoning me. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah! Yeah! I don't want to look at your face!
Don't look at me.
I don't want to look at your face. So I'm having to be honest with myself, like, bruh, this guy didn't do anything at all.
Yeah.
And I'm vexed.
Yeah, I remember I had a recent run-ins with something like that.
What happened?
Basically, I saw my ex-girlfriend's friend. She's a lovely girl though. Like,
of course she would be.
And she absolutely, and you know what? Through the bullshit that we were going through, that, you know, back then, she was actually, the plague.
The plague.
Plague?
It's what it is.
Wow, wow.
Hey, we could call it a whole bunch of other things.
We could,
okay?
We could.
Okay.
Not PG. That's you. Okay. That is, you rate me. Anyways, and it was just like, hey.
But your ass is triggered.
It was like, hey.
Oh my god. But this is what I was saying to you the other day.
Yeah.
While I wasn't reacting like in a big, big physical way, but I was telling Rob, I said, Rob, my eyes are twitching. I'm twitching, I keep on swallowing because I've got like this block in my throat.
Yeah.
Man.
All of that. It was just like, hey, and it was just like, how are you? Because, like, listen, you're in London Bridge, it's fast paced as hell. Mm-hmm. People were moving at 40 miles per hour. And you just see this person, you're like, ah, you just look eyes at them, you're like, I can't even not say hi.
Right.
So you're just like, hey, I was like, when's your train? Like, she's like, oh, it's, and it was definitely like 20 minutes.
I went to a film premiere last year where I was triggered while I was there. I went to a film premiere and I saw these two people and I was like, not today, Satan.
Yes, I remember.
And before the credits rolled, I snuck out the cinema because I was like, today, because I can't lie. I'm a really bad liar.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I'm a bad faker.
Yeah.
So if I saw them, and you know me, I'll open with them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hi.
Yeah. I legit had to say it. I was just going to an appointment. I was in a rush because I just couldn't. I was just like,
yeah.
I was happy stuff. I got mine. It's good to see you. Everything's going well. I died off. I wasn't going anywhere. I was going home. But like, I'm not trying to, because. No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't trying to do it. I wasn't trying to take myself back there. And she had done nothing wrong. Definitely nothing wrong, but it's your associated, simple.
So I think what happens is
people. Yeah.
I think what happens out there with people, especially us men, we experience these things and then we try and find justifications for our actions, like as a result of whatever that triggering is. Mm. And that justification very rarely points to the fact that we're hurting for another reason. Mm-hmm. And that reason is our responsibility, solely our responsibility, to figure out and really go into it.
Mm.
And as men, we wanna do things that we know how to do. We wanna do things that we're proficient at. We're very, very rarely, we're not like predisposed to getting out of our comfort zone emotionally. Physically, go and climb that mountain. Go and drive that fast car. Yeah, we've been doing that. It's like, beat my chest. My dick's bigger than yours.
Yeah.
You know,
all of that.
But like, in terms of like, my heart's bigger than yours, or my heart is my emotions are important. My mindset is key. We don't really go there. And so for me, I've had to go into this really scary, surprisingly not so dark place of accepting that. Wow. So. These broken pieces from 1999, from 2003, you know, these things that have shaped who I am, mm-hmm. that have helped to shape who I am, are things that are my responsibility to figure
yeah.
out.
Yeah,
I have to fix it. I have to do something about it. And we also don't like the idea. And Mandem, please feel free to just to disagree if you want to.
Yeah.
But I think that we don't like the idea of collaborating with another human being. In dealing with those emotions,
yeah. as men, yeah,
as men,
100%, definitely. Yeah. I mean, look, like it, and I think that's something that's just hardwired on into us in terms of just I'm a man and I'm a man and I can deal with my stuff because I'm a man and because I'm dealing with my own, I'm a man for that reason. So even more so when it comes to emotions, no way. It's just like what? Why would I go and sit down with my bros like we are doing now and just be very open with you know, just talking about triggers and emotional trauma and blah blah blah. It's just it's just not something that is a construct of society, just doesn't work. Well, a relative to the constructs of society. It's so important because as we know, the highest killer of you know,
men under 45
it's suicide.
Yeah.
So you know,
it takes a generation.
And I'm sure if some of those men had an outlet to speak with their bros or whatever, I'm sure some of them would still be here
freely
as well.
Freely,
yeah. That's with no, and it's just like there's no judging. It's just like we're understanding. We're like, cool.
Hang on, let me put something out there.
So.
And even if you are going to be judged, and then what?
Okay, and yeah, in a sense that, yeah, I hear you. In a sense that it's like, yeah, no, I hear you.
Yeah, and then yeah. what? No, because that's
like the... You got to see, exactly, because it's like sometimes...
What we've done is we've created, in our circles, we've created a space. For example, first time I met you, we just hit it off. Like, it was nearly the charts. Like, it was not even difficult, right? I'm like, okay, cool. For me, I can tell what kind of a person somebody is, like, when I meet them, blah, blah, blah. Me and you met, and then we were outside BBC Studios after we did that show that morning, and we Victoria Dodge was the one, and we spoke for like what, an hour and a bit after we were done. Like, we were just hanging out. It's the first time we met each other, right? So that's cool. Me and you, Rob, like the first time we met.
Must I?
That's a story for another podcast. But when I first met you, again, just click, right? And it was great. And our first ever in-depth conversation
was in depth.
But what it is that we've created situations where we are comfortable in that way, right? And I personally believe that I've created an environment around me where people will not and do not feel judged. But then how about this? What? So because you can't find a place where you don't feel judged, you can't deal with your emotions. Is that healthy?
Yeah.
Is that advisable? Can you? Is that an excuse?
Yeah. And to judge is to like could be just to pull someone up and be like, actually, hold on. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's where actually the growth is and that recovery is. So, for example, there's some things I might say to Gavin and say, you know, you need to go speak to someone about that. Do you know what I mean? That could be my way of saying, look, you're not necessarily addressing this the right way.
I'm being chastised when Rob talks to me about stuff. And the thing is, like, he deals with it in the way that I prefer, which is pretty much like a straightaway thing, because I don't do this whole like later. On New Year's Eve, he messaged me. He goes, "Oh, we need to talk about something tomorrow." I said, "Nah, now."
Quick.
I said, "If there's an issue, let's talk about it right now, because I'm not trying to go to sleep on New Year's Day morning,
not knowing."
And then tomorrow, the first conversation we're going to have when I wake up is something that I did wrong. So we spoke about it. He told me what I did. I was devastated. I was like, oh my God.
Of course.
Oh God. I was like, awful. How dare you, right? To myself, right? But then,
it's all cool though. Like, do you know what I mean?
No, of course.
It's important to...
Of course. And even though you're not judging me, one will probably still feel judged to a degree.
Which is normal. Which is fine.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
But don't now then go and like shut yourself off because it's like, oh, you know, because they're just gonna judge me, Brethren. What?
Sometimes the solution is in the judging, quote unquote.
Or the feeling.
Or the feeling.
Because
then it opens up your mind. Like, actually, maybe I'm. You know, maybe I'm.
But you know, though, it's not what they're feeling is not judgment. It's something deeper. It's conviction.
Yes. It's conviction. It's like it's because the thing is when you start to feel like when your defense is you're battling against. What you know actually is the truth. When someone has actually told you, you're like, rah, like, that's you're right, but no.
Yes.
And on the outside, you're like, no, my dickhead, like, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, boy, it's all mad. So,
yes.
So oh actually, my god. You're right. It's important, man.
Charles, what are your thoughts on the whole feeling of being judged per se? What's your take in terms of like how you deal with things and who, you know, are you someone who finds it easy to reach out to others to say, look, this is what's going on, I need to work on this or whatever, or are you more kind of like hermit-esque where you like just sort of try and deal with things in your corner?
I think it's a bit of it's a mix really, like at the moment, like what you guys are saying about just as men we're not being open, like expressing that opinion, saying about, oh, I feel some type of way, I need help. You know, I find it's something I am doing a bit more now than ever before. Like if I feel down, I'll talk to one of my boys and just let them know, like, and just tell them even just like how I feel and stuff, you know. But then I was afraid of judgment. 100%. I was scared of judgment. I don't want to be judged. Like, why would I want to be judged and all that? But then I saw like, well, in life, there's always conflict. You know. Do you know what I mean? And the idea I was coming from now that I'm getting a bit more that I've come to terms with is the idea of having an open discussion that sometimes can be seen as you wanting to have an argument, but it's more of an open social conflict, as in talking about stuff, being direct. Which if you can say it, depending on how the person is sensitive, they could see it as, oh, you're under attack.
Yeah.
But you're having a discussion.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's something that's like, oh, you know, I've come to the conclusion and I'm okay with someone, with my friends even pulling me up and say, hey Charles, you may have did something wrong, etc. And they tell me how they feel. And I'll ask them, well, why do you feel this way? And then they'll ask me, and vice versa. That's openness. But then that takes a certain amount of bravery with you to say that, okay, this is how you feel, and just get it out. And it's not something that I did from before. Like, I'm not that expressive. I think now I'm a bit more expressive, but it's something I had to work on. And the way that we're living in now, like, I remember I went to a funeral of a friend who passed away due to suicide. And, you know, like, that really was like, that was a big question mark, because I was just feeling myself.
It must have been so sobering.
It was in a way, in some sort of way, because we hung around not as much, but I always see him as happy. He was always good. Like, times I was with him, it was nothing but goodness. And when this happens, it flips your whole world. I mean, I was numb by the whole experience, but also I was really confused. I was like, oh, you're so happy. Like, why would you do that?
Why? Yeah, because on the surface you're thinking, you're good, like, how? I mean, I can relate to that, because I went to a friend's funeral last year? Wait, where were you again?
2019.
It was last year. Again, happy, like, just...
Was it suicide?
Yeah, suicide, yeah.
Father Lord.
Suicide. And it's just like, what? Like, you just think, obviously, you know, you think to yourself, okay, number one, okay, you were happy, I don't understand how that happened. Secondly, is there something I could have...
The answer is no.
Because it's the same thing that to accept, you know, and by the way, I am not about to trivialize suicide whatsoever. Although I've never felt suicidal feelings or I've never had suicidal thoughts myself, I'm not going to trivialize it, so I don't want to come across like that at all. But even the person who is suicidal, even for them, it is still their responsibility to deal with what that emotion is. You know, you can want to have been there as much as you want, okay? And you could have done your very best. That human being was going to make the decision that they made anyway.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
And to have your control. I think, and that's the thing, like, I think as people, we feel like when an experience like that happens, you think, well, hold on a minute, I could have, like,
of course, naturally, person, yeah.
I could have done something, that's so friend, I could have stopped something. Mm-hmm. But then in reality, just like you said, it's out of your control. You can't do that. So, yeah, can't do that.
I said I was doing a talk somewhere. I did a talk in a school. This is a few years ago, and this is shortly after Robin Williams had passed away, and he died of suicide.
Mm.
And I remember, you know, when I was touring these schools, the talks were typically very upbeat,
of course,
very happy, super inspiring. Mm. You know, got tears every now and again or whatever. But he was like, you know, like, oh my God, I'm crying because I can't believe how amazing you are and how, you know, how amazing I am and You know, people just having realizations. But then on one particular occasion, someone made a comment to just kind of like bypass people who are seemingly fine.
Mm.
And I said, no. I said, those are the ones you need to be checking on. If you have friends or not someone who's a comedian,
check in with them.
Someone who deals with awkward situations by telling jokes.
Someone that's giving away a lot of energy, man.
Yes, someone who's just doing the most. Hi! All of that. Those are the people you need to be checking.
Those people are giving out hella energy.
Yeah.
Check on those people, man.
Because you know what, man? These people are trying to turn up the volume of a different voice. Because there's one voice
over
that's
the one
that's saying you ain't shit. Over the voice that's saying that thing you're trying to do is not gonna work. That thing, that voice that says all of these ideas you've got in a world of 7 billion people. Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
These voices that can be so demonic, even.
Demonic.
Now, those people, those high energy folks, you know, check on them.
Yeah.
Check on them. Do you know, and I have to speak for myself on this next comment, do you know, in my journey so far, which just for the listeners out there, just so you know, I feel great, by the way. I feel amazing. I'm very conscious of my mental health. I'm very conscious of myself. And I'm actually due my mental health assessment very soon. So excited to have that. And it's been my first time dealing with any kind of like psychiatric
that kind of person.
Exactly, right? Mm. No, I haven't had any kind of breakdown whereby I have to now be go and see this. I actually referred myself because the same way I picked up my yoga and I said, okay, cool, I need to sort my body out.
People need to start treating their mental health as if, you know.
Right.
As in, you know, it's one of those gyms you see there's a difference. And it's like, I go to the gym. It's like,
that's right.
Just because the mind you can't see mental health doesn't mean you don't need work. Man.
That's right.
That's important. That's good.
Yeah. Right. So I'm excited about that whole thing. But what I'm going to say is this. For me, I still battle with the fact that I pretended to be okay for so long because of all of the pain I was in. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just imagine, and I've written a little bit about this in my new book that comes out next year. I dealt with my family breaking down while going to school, while on a couple of occasions, my mom and my siblings and I had to sleep in a hostel because of domestic violence. And by the way, can I just touch on this? One of my aunties read my first book, and because I made brief mention of infidelity and domestic violence, her feedback to me was, oh, your book is really great, but next time give us a read so that we can just, you know, edit a few things out because you don't want to embarrass your family. That is the energy we are going against.
Yes.
We do not believe in that energy. We do not support that energy. I say, talk your story. I said, auntie, all due respect, it's my story.
And this is
what happened. Now, back to my point. The thing that I'm still battling with is that I pretended for so long that I was okay, that now when I look back, when I stand where I am at 30 years old and I look back and I look at just how broken I am still in a lot of ways, that can be very disheartening. That is an issue. Where I am and blah and my life, and if you want to talk about success and whatever, I'm happy, I'm good. I'm absolutely good. But the battle is looking back and thinking, shit, I am broken. And being broken doesn't necessarily mean that you have to live that brokenness, but the brokenness is real. And the only thing that gives me hope and that makes me feel better is the fact that as much as I would have liked to do things differently, there was nobody who had the time nor the capacity to say, this is not how we deal with trauma. This is not how we deal with triggers. This is the right way to do it. I grew up in the epitome, as do you, in the epitome of, man, don't do that.
Yeah.
100.
Yeah.
It's like, you what? You want to do what?
No. Right. So, for me, I mentioned earlier to you, Charles, in the kitchen, when I was seasoning that wonderful, sumptuous chicken that we will be devouring.
Set the timer real quick.
Very short. What's the timer say? How long does the timer say?
4 minutes.
Four minutes. 4 minutes, and then I have to go and like put the potatoes in and whatever. okay. But we'll be okay to continue the conversation.
Of course.
So for me, I've had to deal with the pain and the reality of looking back. So I was saying earlier to Charles when I was seasoning the chicken that you know, we're talking about something completely different. But I said this. I said you have to become friends with pain.
Yeah.
I did hear you say that actually, and I was just like, yeah.
you have to become friends with pain. Yeah.
And just comment on that, like, and in doing that, I think you can actually live almost like a perfect life. Like, a perfect life is not a flawless life. Like, people think that, you know, a perfect life is where there's no pain, there's no flipping.
Just none of that.
But the lessons are in these things.
What we should aim for, gentlemen, is a balanced life. Yeah? Balance means sometimes stuff is great, sometimes stuff is not great. Now, this statement of make friends with pain, be friends with your pain, because you're gonna bump into these things. I did not expect to bump into anyone at the cinema, not in that particular location, not at that time of day,
and not in the succession
that
happened.
Do you know how can I saw two separate human beings who have known both of them for 20 years? Okay, one I know better than the other. Both have not done anything to me. But I saw them both on that day, one on social media, one in person, and they both triggered the same thing. Now, that was painful in hindsight. But guess what? The reason why I was able to be on the phone to Rob that evening and to talk it out, and yesterday I wasn't dragging my feet in despair, and today I was excited and gassed to go to my yoga class, is because I made friends with that pain. Yes, I was triggered. Is it the last time I'll be triggered? Probably not.
Probably not, yeah.
No.
But I was like, okay, cool. I know who you are.
Yeah.
It's like, for example, when you have someone like that relative.
That one.
That relative.
Everyone's got that relative.
You know that relative who, like, as soon as they walk in, everyone's like, oh.
And everyone does it. Like, you just watch everyone like, oh.
Yeah. But they are your relative.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
And you know what? You know what? You learn how to deal with them. You learn how to accommodate them, okay? You don't have to accept their bullshit, but you learn that, okay, this is who this person is, and fact is, this person is my relative. Full stop. That's it. Case closed. Yeah? That's what it should be like with pain. That's what it should be like with embarrassment. That's what it should be like with discomfort. It's like, okay, cool. This feeling has come. Instead of running away and trying to shield myself.
Actually,
let me face this thing. Because I tell you what, pretty much almost every moment I was on the phone to you the other day, Rob, explaining to you what I was going through, I felt like a fool. I'll be very honest. Yeah, I know you don't think I'm a fool.
But the fact is... From your own perspective, you showing, expressing it,
I feel like a fool because it's like this happened so long ago.
But as I was saying, bro, the brain is flipping powerful.
Yeah.
You can want to get all psychological with it, mate. It's insane. Like, just things, you know, just the slightest trigger, it just comes out with a massive, like, enormity. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? Like, completely throws you off. It just disables you differently.
Well, it can do.
And it can.
It can do. Because for me,
yeah,
we can safely say that I have not been disabled by anything that's happened to me. But that's because I'm looking in, right?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I'm not saying I'm perfect at dealing with this stuff, okay? But then I do believe that I have a special gift, which is why we even have this whole Brunch Brothers platform. That's why we do what we do, because I know that when men are around me, that they say things that they typically wouldn't say in other circumstances and situations. That's why my interviews for New Age Excellence are so lit, because people tell me stuff that they don't tell other interviewers.
They are so sick, guys.
Yeah. Oh my God. And people turn around and say to me after interviews, they say, do you know what? That was an amazing interview. I've never been asked that before. I've never been asked this. I've never... So and that's because of the level of emotional aptitude that I've decided to work towards. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm perfect at it, okay? But I will tell you this. If you're listening right now and you're wondering to yourself, how am I going to carry myself through this? How am I going to go on this journey of being friends with my pain? How am I going to go and revisit my triggers? How am I going to address my traumas? The answer is nobody knows. There's no rule book. There's no chicken. No. It doesn't mean the chicken's ready. By the way, guys, it just means it's time for me to go.
It gives us a
yeah. I just need to go and put in the potatoes. So in a moment, potatoes, I'm going to sneak out of here so that you guys can continue the conversation. And while I go and add the potatoes and do all that and turn the chicken over, and then we'll come back and continue. But yes, back to what I'm saying. There are no answers. People have very bravely and recently said to me, but I'm scared. And I have the most simple saying. I say, do it scared. Delve into those emotions scared. Delve into those thoughts scared. Do it.
Yeah.
Go and meet those emotions. Shake hands with the devil, man. Because you're not going to not meet him. At some point in your life. You're not.
You know about that, man.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm negotiating this fact that you're causing me trouble with
him. Imagine.
Like, how can we?
Yeah. Imagine going to war with zero knowledge about your enemy. On that note, I'm just gonna go and turn over the chicken. You guys can continue this conversation. Yeah. But yes, imagine trying to go to war and trying to fight a serious battle without any knowledge of who your opposition is, without knowing who your enemy is. Do it scared.
Alright. So Cass has gone to sort put the potatoes in the oven. So it's just me and you, Charles. Interesting. But it's been a great conversation, man. So far, and you know, I think it's more important, especially in this climate that we're in, for men to just really open up and, you know, talk about their emotions. Because I don't know about you, but I see out there in the especially within social media, these images of the ideal man being perpetuated. You know.
To be honest, but you know, as a man, that like there's men. Can't fit into a box and then 100%. Say,
yeah,
well, this is what makes a man.
A man.
I mean,
I think
everyone's that every definition of being a man is very different. Some people feel like being a strong, alpha, dominant male person is ideal. Well, it's not ideal for everyone because everyone is not born to be a leader. Not everyone's supposed to be a super dominant. Not everyone's supposed to move in a way that like they command people and stuff. You know, like I it's always an annoying idea that like the idea of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
I sort of sit there and think, what is toxic masculinity? Why is this narrative being driven to say that men have this toxic masculinity? Because it's like a word that everyone throws around, and you sort of just think, I would sort of think, well, yeah, okay, so it stems from the whole Weinstein case and the idea of men in power being in control. But then but then it's the word that gets thrown around a lot, and I kind of.
So do you feel like it needs a bit more definition, or like
that? But then I wouldn't take it as serious. I would ignore it because it's like I would ignore it in the sense because it's like it's a word that gets thrown around and there isn't a definitive meaning to it. And also, it's something like because as you said in social media, like men gets portrayed as like, oh, we need to need to sort our own lives. We need to do this. We need to do that. But then
money.
Yeah.
So as soon as you're born.
But then when you think about as you as a man, you can't be put as a box. There's too many definitions or ways to be men. My definition of ways to be men is different to yours. And to yours. Do you know what I mean? We may have a similar idea based our own our own value systems, but then
culture,
yeah. But then it's still ultimately it's how you make of it, you know. It's how you make your own gender and stuff. So it's
yeah. Another thing as well. Do you feel like, obviously, I think as men, but as black men, we have a very unique way we navigate this whole subject of like mental health and that. So we have that cultural.
Yes.
There's a lot of cultural.
There's 100%.
Where, you know, compared to say one of my Caucasian counterparts,
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, certain things where I'm just like, well, wait,
I
feel like, especially sort of black masculinity specifically, it you know, well, my parents anyways, my dad's obviously he's African Ugandan. And you know, his the way he was brought up and stuff like that, I guess that's principles brought down from my granddad, but then also principles brought down from my great granddad, blah blah blah, has led him to be the person he is today,
yeah.
Which is quite a muted person, not necessarily emotional, whatever they could be. Like sometimes I'm like, I don't know what I cannot tell what you're thinking of.
I'll tell you this, I think,
you know, and
as black African men, the natural way to be, according to a lot of our experiences, is sort of that silence, that
just,
you know, yeah.
I'm dealing with it.
And I've got it, and it's fine, and you know, it's handled.
It's handled.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Man, I'm about to burst some of your pretty little bubbles out there. some of these men who you see, like, oh, you know, my dad's solid on. Granddad's a G, and oh, you know, nah, my dad's not a man of many words, you know. Nah. Whatever. Okay, cool. Now, that doesn't mean that we are like that naturally. There are some people who are told, you know, let's just line up three boys, right? They're all 7 years old, and you tell all three of them, man up. Yeah? They fall down, they bust their knee, they all start crying, and then it's like, shut up, man up. Yeah? One of them will turn around. And we're like, what? Man up. Like in his head, he's like, man up. So what he'll do is like, he'll find another place to go and express his emotions.
Yeah.
Another boy will just be like, gonna just suppress it. And I'm gonna be cool because to be cool is what it is.
That's right.
But I'm being it, yeah.
That's right.
Holding it in.
That's right. And then the other boy will be like, okay, cool. These emotions are a lot for me to handle. And the men around me, if they're not cool and calm and chill, they're being loud and aggressive and obnoxious. So do you know what? Whenever I'm feeling an emotion, I'm just gonna channel it that way. Have you guys seen that? I'm not the only one. Okay, great. Right. So watch this. This is what happens. So certain people then, some people's dads or granddads or uncles, they die now. Okay? And then you start seeing small houses. For those of you listening who don't know what a small house is in African culture, it is when a man is married to a woman and he has a household and they have children, and that is his main house. Big house. And then small house, it's the side chick, the thought on the side, the baby machine down the road, you know? And then these people turn up to the funeral. It's like, yeah, this is the, you know, his kids. And people are like, what? How could he do this? He was so wonderful. Ha, na, 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 na. And then you find out that same cool, collected, calm man that you loved for those reasons, he went and he bore his emotions to the side chick. He went and he found emotional sustenance because he was allowed, by the way, don't think I'm blaming women, this is a cultural issue, so just don't get off your feminist horses before you start racing at me. But because he felt like I can't be this emotive individual in my household, a lot of them, they go out and find emotional solutions elsewhere. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I remember reading about Ashley Cole when he was cheating on his wife Cheryl, and the prostitutes were writing accounts of what it was like having sex with him. All of them were talking about how he was making love to them in a passionate, like, kind of way, like making love type of thing. Like he was paying prostitutes to make love to them, right? Which means that there must have been something, again, not gonna blame Cheryl, but there must have been something in his household that said to him, you can't be this vulnerable. You can't be this emotive. You know what I mean? You can't be that, you know, at home. And so there's a lot of people that you find that, a lot of people's granddads, when they pass away and they start finding out all these trials and tribulations and pains and things that they went through, and you're like, oh my God, why didn't we know? Because he was the head of the household, you know what I mean? He was the head of the clan. It's different to be, it's one thing being head of, like, you know, one family.
Nah, it's like when you're head of the family.
When you're head of, right, exactly. Like what your granddad was, you know, before you passed on.
Yeah.
You know, being that person that when he goes, like, it's gonna be impactful. But we tend to find out a lot of things when these people die, and it's like, oh my God, but why didn't we know? Because where you were was not a safe enough environment, because you can't have, if you may, it may have been safe, but you didn't say so. You didn't assure the person next to you to say, by the way, if you feel some type of way about something, please feel free to. Okay, listeners, we have changed location. We are now in the kitchen because I'm just finishing up this delicious dinner.
Ugh, the aromas.
Yes, the aromas are truly delightful. Unfortunately, Charles has had to go. So first things first, we ran out of recording space before, and we were just chatting away for like another 5 minutes, and so whatever. So the last thing that we touched on, obviously, was the whole thing of when, you know, certain people have, you know, they're running families or being the heads of a family or whatever, the head of a family, and then they die, and then you start to discover who this person was altogether, something completely different. And I believe the point that I was driving to when we were talking about all of that was just simply, you know, do everything that you can to be present and aware of who you are, how you feel about things, and it's your responsibility to find an appropriate space to be able to channel that.
And address it.
That's right. Because at the end of the day, man, you know, you are in charge of your happiness, as cliche as that sounds. You're in charge of your happiness, you're in charge of, you know, how, you know, your life turns out as a result of the things that you do. And the things that you do are a result mainly of your mindset and your heart position and how you feel. So, you know, guys, just thank you so much for listening. Thanks for welcoming us back. For all the listeners who were listening to the previous episodes, I want to thank you for, you know, your loyalty. I want to thank you for your support. Thank you for the messages. Thank you for the kindness that you've shown. We've had Rob today. We've had Charles. You guys can seek out their information in the information. Their social media contacts in the information. Comes with this episode, and yeah, just also, if you have any questions or anything, hold on, I've got to taste this.
Topic suggestions.
Oh my God, this is so good. the Lord is good. Yes, if you have any topic suggestions, anything, any questions, whatever, feel free to get in touch, be in contact, and yeah, all good, no hurt. So. Yeah, this has been Brunch Brothers Podcast. This has been
Rob.
And I have been Cass. Thank you so much. Peace and love. Happy Sunday. And the rest of the week, whatever day you listen to this, good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.